mandate in response to increasing evidence of unmet developmental and behavioral needs of young children involved in the child welfare system, federal legislation was passed to require states to implement referral policies for children under the age of 3 with substantiated cases of maltreatment to Part C early intervention services. Language to that effect was included in the 2003 reauthorization of the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, or CAPTA, which guides child welfare, and the 2004 reauthorization of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, which guides Part C early intervention services. There are several challenges to the implementation of this mandate. States may experience a large increase in referrals and enrollment, yet the federal mandate did not come with any extra money attached. Second, the two systems have different service cultures, which may make service integration difficult. And third, these children and families are likely to present with different needs than the typical family involved in early intervention before the mandate. For example, before the mandate, these families were typically children who were born prematurely or at low birth weight or had a syndrome like Down syndrome, so they had delays in language, cognition, and motor skills. Children who are abused or neglected are likely to have delays in these areas, but they're also more likely to have issues in the the emotional and behavioral areas. And this has not been a traditional strength of early intervention as a system. So there's considerable interest in measuring the impact and in figuring out how to successfully implement the mandate. To that end, I conducted a study, it's a case study, with the Meeting Street Early Intervention Program of the initial implementation in Rhode Island. Meeting Street serves one-third of the population in Rhode Island. And the study is called Referral and Engagement of Children from Child Welfare to Early Intervention Services, What Works in Rhode Island. And those are my four partners listed on the screen. I won't go into the study design details, but it was a mixed methods case study. A brief overview of the rest of the presentation. I'll describe the implementation plan at the state and program level. Then I will present quantitative and qualitative measures of the initial impact. And finally, I will sum up with lessons learned about what works and where we need to go to continue improving systems integration. The major focus at the state level was on the referral procedures. Implementation began in early 2006 with an interagency memorandum of agreement. To avoid flooding the early intervention system, the state chose to implement developmental screening for children without presumptive eligibility. So a child without any evidence of delay or condition would be first referred to the Visiting Nurses Association, or VNA, of Care New England for a developmental screening. And then if the screening showed evidence of a potential delay, then they would be referred to early intervention for a full developmental evaluation. Also, in April of 2006, they hired a referral liaison who was to train the DCYF workers on the referral process. DCYF is the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which is the lead agency for child welfare in Rhode Island. So she trained the workers, and she also she was tasked with ensuring complete and timely communication between the two systems, and she also served as a point of contact for early intervention service coordinators if they are having difficulty getting a hold of busy DCYF caseworkers. Meeting Street focused on both the referral piece and the service piece. For the internal referral process, they assigned people with backgrounds in infant mental health, social work, or experience working with DCYF to process the referrals and to serve as service coordinators for families. The Infant Mental Health Initiative was begun in 2003, partly to help the program prepare to serve these families because the program leaders anticipated that they would have a higher level of emotional and behavioral needs. Funds initially came from a SAMHSA grant, and then they got a small continuation grant. Currently, services are funded through an insurance mandate, although not at a level that is required for some of the more needy families. They also hired an infant mental health coordinator and service coordinators with backgrounds in social work and working with DCYF. They have ongoing consultation with local and national experts. And finally, they instituted a regular and comprehensive supervisory structure, and they have an infant mental health team that meets regularly. So how is this plan working? This graph presents data on statewide referrals by referral source from July 2004 through April 2007. The bottom line is the DCYF referrals, and the top line is the combined VNA and DCYF referrals. The green arrow marks the start of the mandate in January 2006, and the yellow arrow marks the start of the liaison in April 2006. Just a note of caution, the red line is an overestimate because the VNA does refer children to early intervention that are not DCYF involved, but they are the screening source, and I do have some preliminary tracking data that shows about 60% of the VNA referrals could have been initiated by DCYF. That said, the preliminary time series analysis of this pattern shows us a gradual but significant increase following the start of the mandate and especially following the implementation of the liaison. This is true for both the DCYF-only line on the bottom and the combined VNA and DCYF line. This stands in comparison to referrals from other sources, which I don't have pictured here, but they bounce around with no particular time trend pattern related to the start of the mandate or the hiring of the liaison. So this indicates that Rhode Island is making progress towards successful implementation of the mandate as far as referring the kids. Looking at Meeting Street, this graph shows enrollment duration by DCYF status. The event that is being modeled is discharge due to family withdrawal. The green line is non-DCYF-involved children, and the blue line is DCYF-involved children. The y-axis is the probability of staying enrolled beyond a given time, which is plotted on the x-axis, and that is weeks of enrollment. And you can see that the two lines are basically identical until over 100 weeks of enrollment, at which point the likelihood that a DCYF-involved child would be discharged because the parent withdrew them starts to get higher than the non-DCYF-involved children. However, it's noteworthy that these two groups didn't diverge until, let me back up. The mean enrollment time was 48 weeks with a standard deviation of 39 weeks, so it's noteworthy that they didn't diverge until over two standard deviations past the mean. So those were the quantitative measures. Now I'll talk about the quantitative. Okay, quantitative first, qualitative now. I interview direct early intervention service providers and program administrators and state administrators, and I listen for themes that were related to implementation that have been identified by implementation experts as important, and noted whether these were challenging or helpful and why. The most frequently mentioned challenges were number of decision points, need for service integration, new and existing rules, and need for additional resources. The reasons why these were challenging were because of the characteristics of the parents, the level of chaos in their lives, and the reluctance to enroll in services, and also communication challenges and challenges arising from serving a mandated population in early intervention, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. It's not surprising that a systems change initiative that focuses on service integration is a challenge because of inadequate service integration, but the frequent mention of this as a challenge indicates that more work still needs to be done on that area. One of the existing rules under the IDEA is that programs have 45 days from referral to evaluate a child and then begin service planning for those who are eligible. This is harder for DCYF-involved children because they have more decision points between referral and enrollment, and some of these decision points are new rules created by the mandate. For example, one respondent said, quote, "With DCYF kids, we have to first ensure that we have the developmental evaluation form, and then we have to determine whether or not a surrogate parent is needed, and we have to determine whether or not the biological parent is to be involved, and all of this requires phone calls back and forth to the DCYF worker. Hooking up with them is sort of a bottleneck, if you will. It usually takes at least weeks just to get a hookup with a DCYF worker. And then we have to send the letter off, and the surrogate is appointed, and that comes back, and then we're finally ready to make an appointment for our home visit. So where children who are not DCYF, most likely within 30 days, they will at least have an appointment for their initial evaluation. A DCYF child, it may take us 30 days just to get in touch with a DCYF worker. I would say it probably doubles their time before services are rendered." And another quote that expresses the challenges associated with serving a mandated population, which is early intervention's first mandated population, is, "There are differences in policy between early intervention and DCYF. They're mandated many times for that child to be involved in early intervention, and we're a voluntary program. And I think that that's a very big challenge for us in how we are viewed by the family and how engaged. We have to work harder at building that relationship. We have to take on a very different role sometimes in working with the birth parents. So looking at the facilitators, the most frequently mentioned were progress towards service integration, the implementation plan, provider discretion, and additional resources. The fact that service integration and resources were mentioned as both a challenge and a facilitator suggests that progress is being made despite the challenge. The implementation plan to have a referral liaison and an individual and individual provider discretion and efforts improved the timely communication and reduced delays at decision points and reduced resources that are wasted on service duplication or playing communication tag. The infant mental health component of Meeting Street's implementation plan was seen as helpful. When providers have the time and support as well as the expertise and skills, they are more likely to use their discretion to build relationships with families that decrease the influence of parental reluctance or being mandated to participate. A couple of people saw the infant mental health initiative as more of a challenge, but most were positive about it. However, there was recognition that it was still a work in progress that needed continued efforts to get it right. So moving to lessons learned in Rhode Island about implementing this mandate, what has worked is to focus on service integration through the creation of the referral liaison, who improves communication and reduces delays at decision points. This not only facilitates referrals, but it also helps early intervention meet the 45-day timeline rule. And I would argue it also is likely to improve engagement of families because other research and other systems has shown increased time between referral and enrollment reduces engagement. So this has been achieved through the identification and allocation of resources in terms of personnel and funding. Next is that what has worked at Meeting Street is the service plan. The Infant Mental Health Initiative was a valued resource, and provider expertise and discretion are key to relationships which were supported by internal policies. So the Infant Mental Health Initiative not only provided children and families with needed services that are integrated into the program, but it also supported the early intervention staff so that they were better able to build relationships and break down trust barriers to engage families. Again, resources were key to make this happen. The third lesson is that the mandate provided initial leverage for improvement for child welfare involved children and arguably for all children. However, the rules still need fine-tuning to fit better because referral alone will not help children. They need to be meaningfully engaged in services, and one factor that needs to be considered in Rhode Island and other states that choose pre-referral screening is to determine whether this is a negative influence on the eventual engagement of child welfare involved children because it introduces another decision point and may increase the time between referral and enrollment. Also, the initial success at Meeting Street may not be sustained without attention to reimbursement at the state and federal level for provider effort and time required to engage these families within the 45-day timeline and also provide the infant mental health services, which involve not only direct services but also time spent in supervision and case conferencing to problem solve about more challenging cases. So finally, in the words of one of my participants, a paradigm shift is needed for sustained improvement. I'll quote one participant who said, "What does it mean to operate a voluntary program that now has mandated participation? I don't know that there's been a lot of thought from a program design perspective at the state level to provide that level of guidance and retweak the program as needed from a standards perspective. The tension between mandated and family-centered service paradigms needs to be considered more systematically at the systems level. Although the Infant Mental Health Initiative has helped Meeting Street to engage these children and families, it's still a challenging service paradigm for some of the providers. And Meeting Street often foots the bill for time that's required but above a billable amount or not in a billable category. So system level support is required to shift to an infant mental health service paradigm and avoid losing ground that has been gained thus far. For the child welfare system, it's an ongoing shift towards a developmental approach to child and family well-being, which requires not only referral but ongoing collaboration with early intervention service providers to promote engagement. And finally, I'll sum up with this cartoon that says, "I'm afraid you've had a paradigm shift. Change is hard." Both the child welfare system and the early intervention system must shift towards a more preventive public health approach that addresses the negative sequelae of child maltreatment before they become bigger problems. Increased resource allocation will be important to this shift. As we saw during the opening session, there is a big discrepancy between the amount of money that is spent on medical care that addresses problems versus public health care that prevents problems. This mandate is an opportunity to shift towards a more preventative paradigm, but it's only a first step. We need to attend to implementation challenges and continue advocacy to find and fund solutions if we are going to achieve this paradigm shift and make a meaningful difference in the health and well-being of children involved in child welfare. And just briefly, acknowledgement of the people that participated and a reference list if you're interested in implementation. I believe this presentation is going to be on the essential learning that will be available after the conference is over. Thank you. Sure. Are there any questions? No, we don't have foster care nurses, and as far as the children falling through the cracks, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families is developing a tracking system to try to figure out how much this is happening and how to improve it. It's the initial implementation. I didn't really look at that yet because they need to kind of tweak things to be able to know that. For the VNA screening, actually, the VNA had a contract that they just told the state that they can't afford it anymore, so they're not doing it anymore. The VNA was through a contract with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. It was a joint contract, so it was shared funding. But the VNA can no longer do that, so now the department is trying to find other providers, which actually may end up being early intervention programs. So it's all system in flux. And as far as the other states, I do have some knowledge, but it basically ranges from people sort of not doing anything because this is an unfunded mandate and the regulations were only just recently released, to states doing a complete systems overhaul along the lines of the paradigm shift. New Mexico comes to mind, where they're really developing their behavioral health capacities.
Maybe one more.
Okay. You had your hand up first.
Thank you.
the brief answer is that these are preliminary analyses. I have a mountain of other data that I will analyze that will get at some of these finer points. And about the pre-referral screening, I think the idea is to provide the same kind of contract from DCYF that paid for part of the screening by the VNA to provide that money to the early intervention program, so it's not Part C money. And the state is also looking at whether referrals are, you know, whether the how many children go on to be referred to early intervention. And so if it's, you know, 90% of them go on to be referred to early intervention, then maybe the screening portion isn't needed. So the state is looking at that. Thank you very much.